This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey folks, welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. This is episode 4. Lots to get to this week. We'll be talking with National Women's Hockey League Commissioner Danny Rylan about some controversy with the New York Islanders and a recent promotion aimed at women. We'll also talk about the brewing feud in Montreal between Coach Michelle Therrien and PK Subban, and we'll talk about an even bigger controversy going on in the OHL with the Flint Firebirds. Thanks for joining us.
A recent promotion by the New York Islanders, one that's been done by a few other NHL teams, has caused a bit of a stir in social media over the last couple days. I'll read it to you. This is what the New York Islanders have planned for Thursday, February 18th. On one hand, you have Guys Night Out. Pick from one of four Islanders games to get together with the guys for a great night out. Your ticket for the game includes two beer vouchers featuring a discount off regular prices. Okay, that's one half of it. The other half is Hockey and Heels, presented by Coors Light, with Paint Night. Grab the girls and join the New York Islanders for Hockey and Heels on Thursday, February 18th, starting at 6 p.m. Start the evening with Hockey 101, presented by Islanders team staff members, before dinner at the 4040 Club and restaurant by American Express. So our reaction in the office here was, is this a bit patronizing? Is this a bit out of touch to have a promotion like this and calling it Hockey and Heels and introducing Hockey 101 to female fans? And we decided we want to have someone a lot more qualified to talk about it, so we're very pleased to introduce to you the commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League, the first North American league, women's league to pay players, and the New York Riveters general manager, Danny Rylan. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So we're curious with your take. Our take is that it seems a bit patronizing, but what do you think when you see a promotion like this? Is it setting people back, or what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, there were over 22 million women who watched or attended an NHL game last season, which is over 36% of their fan base. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense that the NHL is trying to market to these women. And from the NWHL side, you know, we're happy to be a part of the conversation and maybe even help them market to the women that are really just an extremely valuable part of their fan base.
Right. And Danny, you're someone who grew up loving the game. You were a captain of an NCAA Division I team. Would you say that you represent who they should be targeting? Not the new fan, but the more realistic fan, the female fan who grew up knowing the game, playing the game, and loving the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think fans come in all different shapes and sizes, and it's not only maybe the typical fans that you would assume. You know, obviously, I started playing hockey because I was a fan of actually the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I think it's kind of chicken or the egg. I don't know if all hockey fans play hockey or vice versa. So really, I think the biggest thing is that the fans just want to be fans and kind of, you know, relating it back to the NWHL, like originally we thought we would be targeting mostly female hockey players and girl hockey players, but really the number of boys that come to our games with their dads who are fans of the NWHL and, you know, their favorite team is the New York Riveters or whatever team it may be, it's really shocking. So I don't think it always relates to someone who's played hockey who becomes a fan of, you know, professional sports or professional hockey league. So I think when they're looking to target these women, they're women who are fans of the sport and you know, not only just because they played.
Right. And I understand that the Riveters are now going to work with the Islanders to sort of update this promotion. Could you share a little bit about that and just any ideas you have for how better to promote the game to women?
Yeah, and I think that was a big part of it. You know, we were so happy that they reached out to us to be a part of the conversation. And, you know, we wish that we were part of the planning a little bit before, you know, kind of the week of. But at the end of the day, like, we know how to target our fans, and we tried to kind of spin it a little bit in some of our promotion yesterday with a little Twitter campaign, you know, all hockey players wear heels with a nice tight shot of just skates, you know, skates are a nice little pump. So I think that Like I said, we're happy to be a part of the conversation and look forward to continuing to help the NHL reach this demographic because it is such a valuable one. You know, actually women spend 80% of all household income. So it's definitely a market and a demographic that the NHL kind of needs to survive and also find a way to market to them appropriately.
Now, Danny, the NWHL season is humming along quite nicely, and I was just curious, you know, how do you manage expectations for the growth of the women's game and the women's pro game, considering how young it is compared to the NHL, which is closing in on 100 years? It seems to me that, you know, people kind of forget what the roots of the NHL was and that, you know, there wasn't 20,000 people going to Leafs games 100 years ago or anything like that. Is it tough to remind people of what the women's game is in terms of it really being in its infancy in the pro capacity?
Yeah, it's actually a refreshing question, so thank you. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, we're in year one and, you know, we're doing our best to make all the right decisions. And fortunately, we have leagues like the NHL that have been around for almost 100 years to look to help us make the right decisions. But at the end of the day, we're very much in our infancy and still looking to grow. You know, there are over 70,000 girls playing hockey in the United States now, and, you know, a number plus a couple thousand in Canada as well. So the feeder system and the pool of girls playing is continuing to grow, and it's only going to help us, you know, sustain our league. But at the end of the day, you're right, we're still in our infancy, and, you know, there's still a ton of opportunity, and really where we're at is a state of exponential growth.
Excellent. And obviously, you know, while this season is still going on, I'm sure you're looking forward to the future. What can you tell us about the latest with the league in regards to sponsorship or next season or even ideas of future expansion?
Yeah, you know, sponsorship and television deals make the sports world go round. And in this first year, we got the iconic sponsor in Dunkin' Donuts and signed a regional sports deal, Sportsnet deal with Nesson in New England. And we're looking to continue to tackle those moving into next season. As far as expansion is concerned, you know, it's very it's on our radar, and we know that hockey was born in Canada, and there's also a ton of girls and women playing outside of the Northeast. So it's on our radar, but our focus right now is actually just rolling into our inaugural playoffs, which start this March, first weekend of March, and make those a huge success, and then really put our heads down and plan accordingly for next season.
Well, Danny, that's great insight. Thanks so much for being on the show, everyone. That was Danny Ryland, Commissioner of the NWHL. Danny, it's a real pleasure. Hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the Montreal Canadiens suffered another tough loss last night. Late goal led to a loss against the Colorado Avalanche, in which Michel Therrien not only benched PK Subban for a mistake, but sort of called him out afterward. We talked just a couple weeks ago about how the Canadiens are in free fall, and now there's all this controversy. Ken, straight up, should the Montreal Canadiens fire coach Michel Therrien?
Yes, for this and so many other reasons. Yes, I believe they should. I believe that Michel Therrien has lost that room, and I think last night was another indication of a desperation move by a guy who just doesn't have the answers anymore. I'm not convinced he's as big a part of the problem as a lot of other people do, although I can certainly see the flaws in some of the coaching decisions he's made. But he clearly doesn't have the answers, and I think last night was a really ill-advised thing that he did. Because to me, you know, PK Subban last night, he's looking at the situation. They're in a downward spiral. They can't win a game to save their lives. You know, PK Subban, who's their most dynamic, their best player, their most dynamic player, figures, you know, okay, well, I'm gonna try and win this game for us because I want to do something. I want to be part of the solution here. And it all goes sideways when he gets the puck knocked off his stick and he loses an edge and falls down and they come back and score. But to me, that's a lot different than a guy who doesn't care or who might have just made a real laissez-faire play on that play. You know, I mean, if he had done that, then maybe you rip him. But like, this was a guy who was trying to win, who was trying to help you and doing everything he could. And then he just gets ripped for it after the game. I thought it was a really, really bad move.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the play itself. If there's anybody at fault, it's Max Pacioretty. You know, even though Subban lost an edge and gave the puck up, that was a 3-on-3. And
exactly.
And you know, like they had folks covered at the beginning, and then Pacioretty just decided to take no one and stand in the middle of the ice. That forced De La Rose over to the side, and that's what created the goal, leaving Iginla wide open out front. I didn't see Therrien criticizing Pacioretty in any of the clips that I saw this morning, and it just feels like to me, it's a bit of a double standard that he's calling out Subban for an accident versus Pacioretty having no positioning whatsoever, which to me seems, I guess you can call that sort of like, you know, negligence on Pacioretty's part. But and the other thing is, if you don't fire Therrien soon, what are the long-term implications for the Habs? Like, do you risk alienating PK Subban, who, as Ken points out, he's giving his best every night, he's being dynamic, you know, other than Carey Price, he's your superstar. You got to start thinking about years down the road. I know Subban is signed, but do you really want to poison that well by keeping a coach, and I would even say a GM, who have been completely out to lunch lately?
Yeah, it seems like a motivational tactic gone horribly wrong. It's very old school mentality. I'm going to call out my superstar, light a fire under him, and try to get him going. But that's just when you're already losing the room, this has just gone horribly wrong for Therrien.
I also wonder, you know what, at this point, I think you have to ask, subconsciously, does Therrien just want this to end? Because he's picking a fight he cannot win. You're choosing to rail against your superstar player who's signed long-term, who's beloved in the city. There's no way Therrien comes out on top there. And I'm sure publicly he would never say, you know what, I'm tired of this, I want it to end. He may not even know that that's what he wants. But to me, if you're doing that, then I don't know. I have to think that he's just tired of it all.
I definitely think there's some merit to that, Matt, for sure, because, you know, I mean, I've seen other coaches do it. Pat Burns did it late in his tenure in Toronto. It's almost like, you know, the players either give up on the coach or the coach gives up on the players. And I think in last night's case, there was a little bit of the latter. I think, you know, I think Therrien kind of gave up on his star player. You know, the guy makes a mistake. They need a goal late in the game. Desperately, and he nails him to the bench for the last 2 minutes and 3 seconds of the game, and then calls him out afterwards. I definitely think that he's, you know, there might be an element of that to this. It's interesting too, like it's interesting to sort of see what the semantics are of this whole thing, because the comment apparently was in French to a French reporter, and he called the play individualiste, and so. I mean, in English, that translates to individualist. But I've also been told that, you know, if you read the nuance into that, it actually means a selfish play. Yeah. So that makes it even worse. If he's calling, and I'm not sure that he was, because I did take French right up to university, but I'm not that well versed in it. But it, you know, if in fact he's saying that it was a selfish play, I that even adds more fuel to the fire.
And to me, I find it hypocritical to see PK Subban thrown under the bus for essentially being PK Subban. Because when you have a player like that, that's what he does best. He moves the puck well, he takes chances, he gambles, he goes for big hits. And there is always going to be a trade-off. So when you get the downside of it, I don't think it's fair to say, oh, well, hey, wait, never mind. Now we don't want the downside of PK Subban, even though he brings so much good to the table offensively.
Yeah, because then you're beating it out of him. You know, I mean, like, then you're beating that part of his game out of him. And that's what I've been worried about with the Canadians and Michel Therrien and Mark Bergevin for a while. And to me, it goes even back to the high five, low five thing that Carey Price and Subban did after they won games.
Right.
You know, and to me, it was like, you know, I mean, come on. PK Subban and Carey Price, I think we can all agree those two guys are the franchise. Yeah. They're the franchise players. They're the future of the franchise. They're the present of the franchise. I mean, when you start shutting guys down like that, you risk beating some of their personality out of them. And I think when you jump on a player for doing what PK Subban did last night, trying to make something happen, there's errors of commission and there's errors of omission. And last night was an error of commission. Mm. And if you're going to get on a guy for doing that, then don't be surprised if the next time you need a goal, he does just dump it in deep and doesn't make anything happen.
It's almost as if the Montreal Canadiens' brain trust, I include Terry in there, still thinks that Montreal is the most important franchise in the NHL, that they're still the most powerful. Well, no, it's not. Chicago, Los Angeles. Like, if you're a player these days, do you even want to go to Montreal? No. You want to go to Chicago. You want to go to Los Angeles. You probably want to go to the New York Rangers. I mean, geographically, you know, if you grew up for a certain team, maybe you want to go to Toronto or Minnesota. But, I mean, why would you ever want to go to Montreal these days?
Well, I don't doubt that there are players, like, and especially Francophone players, who don't want to be in that fishbowl. But The thing is, right, I mean, people say that, but and they say the same thing about Toronto. But the one thing is that if you're successful in a place like Montreal or Toronto, there is no better place in the league to play. Mm. There is not a better place in the league to play than when one of those teams is winning. I mean, you've seen it too, right? I think you've been there during the playoffs. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So I'm not sure that players don't want to play there. I mean, Gary Roberts wanted to come back to Toronto after he was in Florida. You know, he just couldn't stand the fact that there was absolutely no hockey culture there whatsoever. You know, I mean, when things like this happen, I'm not sure I'd want to go to Montreal if I know that the coach is gonna call me out if I make some kind of egregious error that goes sideways when I'm trying to help the team win.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm saying is like, in the here and now, the way the Habs are set up, like, I wouldn't want to play for Terry and I wouldn't want to play for Bergevin. Bring in new guys, and all of a sudden it's a totally different story.
Yeah, I mean, Bergevin to me though, I mean, this guy was being hailed as a genius not too long ago. I'm not sure so much of it is his fault. I know he hasn't really brought in the bottom six guys that they've needed, but
or the top six for that matter.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they've got some good players, Ryan, and like, I look at their players. Like the other night when they played Arizona, 12 of the guys in the lineup were homegrown guys. I mean, there are teams that would kill to have that kind of draft and developing record.
For me, it's all middle. It's all middle six guys,
look
though.
Look at every other team; they're bottom six. A lot of teams don't have a. Like, this team is not this bad. Like, they're not as good as the team that went out 9-0 to start the season. I mean, I don't think, because nobody's that good. But this team is not this bad. This team is better than, you know, this team is better than Carolina. This team is better than Arizona. This team is better than a lot of those other teams that are mucking their way around trying to find themselves and jump into a playoff spot.
And they don't have Carey Price, right? That's the main thing is, yes, you could say it's an excuse, but what better excuse then we're missing the greatest hockey player in the world, at least, or the greatest hockey player last year.
Right.
And as long as they're getting subpar goaltending, which they have for most of the season, that's a legit crutch for Bergevin to lean on, especially when the Habs' possession numbers have actually improved. So that implies that if they got better goaltending, they'd be winning a lot more games right now.
Yeah. Though their possession has dipped quite a bit as the season goes on. Yeah, I agree. They're not as bad as their record is. But what I saw last year is a team that was pretty much guaranteed to lose in the second round of the playoffs. They were, you know, as long as a team, i.e. Tampa, wasn't afraid of Carey Price, there was no way Montreal was winning a series.
Right.
So everyone agrees that they should fire Michel Therrien, just to wrap this up. But will they? Mark Bergevin said a few weeks ago that he wouldn't fire him mid-season. You know, things change. Things keep getting worse. Does Therrien last the rest of the season, or is he gone in the next few days?
I say he's gone very soon, simply because the Eastern Conference is still wide open enough that there's room for the Habs to make noise. And you never know. Price is probably out the rest of the regular season, but what if he's healthy in time for the playoffs? Suddenly, they're a sleeper team. So I say Therrien goes before the season's up.
I agree with you. I just don't see any end in sight for this downward spiral. And you know, I just think that they have to make this move now, not necessarily to save this season, but just to move on. I mean, you know, get somebody else in place, get an interim in place or whatever, and then figure out what you're going to do. But I mean, it's clearly not working. It's clearly not seemingly getting any better, and the whole relationship is just deteriorating as every day goes by, and I just can't see them being able to sustain that for the next 2 months.
Here's a Machiavellian devil's advocate position. They keep Terry in, go for Austin Matthews. At this point, why not?
But the Oilers are going to get Austin Matthews. Come on.
With Ryan, it always comes back to someone should tank to get Austin Matthews.
Yes, yes. If you're not good, you should be bad.
That's a long way to go, and to not even be assured of getting the kid.
Right, but you could get Laine, you could get Puljujärvi. Like, that's the good thing about the triple lottery this year.
What happens if the Oilers win the damn lottery again? What are we going to do?
Nothing. That's the way the system works.
Bill Daly just puts the card back.
It's not, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, they're going to win. If they win the lottery, they're going to get Austin Matthews, and away we go. I mean, what can you do? That's the way the system works. I've said that you got to change the rules. I don't think you should be able to have a top three pick 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that's the solution.
I don't think you should be able to do that. If the whole reason for the draft is to have parity and to allow teams to be able to, holy crap, Cheap Trick is playing at the outdoor game. That's going to be awesome. You can't let the same team keep having the best players. That's not fair either.
Very true.
And it's just boring, you know? I know we're supposed to be objective in our line of work, and I fashion myself fairly objective, but I'm very biased against boredom. And it's boring if one team gets all the best players.
We're not boring. Well, no, yeah. But, I mean, that's the way that lottery's designed to work. So if they win it, they win it, and we all move on. Everybody will be indignant, and there will be all big, huge outcry, and then we'll all move on.
Speaking of moving on, if you think there's coaching controversies in the NHL right now, how about what's happening in the OHL with the Flint Firebirds? Earlier this season, the owner stepped in and fired the head coach, John Gruden, not the NFL John Gruden. This is the OHL John Gruden. The players revolted. He got rehired, 3-year contract extension. And then a couple months later, just yesterday, he gets fired again. What is going on down in Flint?
Well, Ian, can we say the SH word on this podcast? Like, am I allowed to say it's a complete shit show?
Well, you just did, so yes.
Okay, so it's a complete shit show. This is the case of a billionaire owner who just doesn't understand junior hockey. The guy's from Norway, and he's one of those guys that, you know, that I think he just thinks that because he owns the team, therefore the coach has to listen to what he says, and therefore if he says, you got to play my son on the power play and you got to do all these things, he should just do it. And he doesn't understand that there's a lot more at stake here than his son's career. And like the father of Michael Bitton, the leading scorer who I talked to last night, basically said, you know, I think he's trying to challenge the OHL now. And this is just a guy that's kind of drunk with power, I guess, and just thinks he can do whatever he wants and doesn't realize that, you know, there are, I don't know what the OHL's bylaws are, but there's got to be mechanisms in place for them to be able to, you know, oust an owner if they think that he's operating in what are not the best interests of the league. Because, and he's not. I mean, like, what prospect is of you know, worth his salt is going to go to Flint? Like, why would you go and play in that environment? And, like, you know, the Bitten kid, his dad told me that he's not going back next year if that guy's the owner. And probably most of the other kids from the team won't go back either. So, I mean, it's a really, really unfortunate situation. You know, we've seen it to lesser degrees in other places, namely Sudbury in the last couple of years. And it happens a lot with junior A teams and that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, it really is. It's a terrible situation. I mean, to put these kids what they've been put through, and I give a lot of credit to these kids for standing up and for doing the right thing here. And I just hope that Dave Branch does right by these kids. I care about the fans in Flint. I care that, you know, but I care more about the kids there. And I sure hope that Dave Branch and the OHL does right by these kids, because they owe it. They owe it to these kids.
Yeah. And for the record, Will Bitten is the player on Flint. He'll probably be a second round pick this summer. They might have one or two other kids go. It's really tough because, and I know David Branch is on top of this. They put out a statement last night that he was looking into things, and he was very quick the first time this happened to act. So that's a positive for the kids. But it's tough because, you know, Peter Karmanos was the old owner of the team when they were the Plymouth Whalers. So you had a guy, an NHL guy, who knew what he was doing, who put great people in place. Mike Vellucci was the GM and coach. He's now with Carolina, whom Karmanos owns. And that was a franchise that churned out NHL prospects. Tyler Seguin played for them, just to name one of the more prominent kids. But it is a big deal for the OHL, and obviously the kids come first. But even if you think about overall, you know, that Michigan franchise, that should be one of your bulwarks into one of the best hockey hotbeds in all of America. One of the reasons the OHL is the best of the three junior leagues is that, you know, not only are you getting all the Ontario kids, but you're getting a lot of the Michigan kids too. They've been very good at convincing American kids to go junior instead of NCAA, and there's a long list of kids who have made the switch. And you would think that, you know, having a team, and, you know, they're not the only ones, obviously. There's also Saginaw, and then there's Erie, which is in Pennsylvania. But, you know, having a team in Michigan where the kids can go to an American high school where they know, you know, American history classes, they know that things are going to be in imperial instead of metric, and that sounds like a small thing, but, you know, it's one less thing for the kids to worry about. That should be a franchise that's very successful. There is a fan base there because there's always been hockey in Flint, whether it's at the minor pro level or now junior. And it does really need to get sorted out because it's just bad news all around for the league.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, they have to remove this guy. I mean,
yes.
And, you know, I think the league has to take some responsibility here too, because, you know, I got to wonder how much vetting was done of this guy before he bought the team. I mean, there are people who will say that he bought this team to give his son a place to play and to give his son a place where he could, show his talents to scouts and hopefully get drafted to the NHL. And, I mean, if that's the basis of your ownership plan, then, that's pretty flawed. So
you got some problems, yeah.
What's that?
You got some problems if that's your business plan, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I mean, something's got to be done here. There's got to be some kind of breaking point. But I know that the players just feel as though they cannot play for this Sergei Karin guy, who is the director of operations, who is Nilsson's guy, and has come in to be the interim coach of the team. I know they feel they can't play for this guy. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I assume they're going to step on the ice tonight when they host the Erie Otters in Flint. It's a really, really bad situation and a really, really unfortunate one.
Yeah, a lot of drama for a team in its very first season in the OHL. Okay, let's move on to the mailbag segment of the podcast. You can tweet questions at us using the hashtag THNTalks. So let's get into it. The first question, we can decide how we want to answer this, because the question was simply worded, is Panarin the best rookie? So do we want to say, is he just the best rookie, or is he going to win the Calder, and is there a difference?
I don't think there should be a difference. If you're the best rookie, you're the best rookie. That's the letter of the law there. And, I mean, based on the points he's put up, I would say he's the front runner. The only players I could see contesting him at this point, since Connor McDavid, you know, he did have the 5-point night against Toronto. But Shane Gostisbehere be here simply because he's a defenseman putting up record numbers and putting up record streaks. I think he would have an outside chance because of the positional difference. And then otherwise you're looking at somebody making an argument for Dylan Larkin based on his two-way game, but certainly Panarin has to be the front runner based on the points that he's put up.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't think you're gonna get. It's not the guy who's gonna be the best player, because I think we all can probably agree that if it was gonna go to the guy who's ultimately gonna be the best player, it would go to Connor McDavid. But Panarin is, you know, he's been dynamic this year. Yes, he's had a great line mate, but he's also, I think, brought a lot of good things out in Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And I think he's helped Patrick Kane almost as much as Patrick Kane has helped him. So to me, the gap is widening unless McDavid keeps putting up 4 and 5 spots, which I don't think he can do on the team he's on. I think it's pretty much a slam dunk for Panarin at this point.
I don't necessarily agree. And to me, I don't think the gap is widening. I think it's getting smaller. I think it's because of Gostisbehere. To me, when you talk about the best rookie, who's the rookie that has accomplished the most impressive thing this year? And it's not about age. I know Panarin's older. I don't care about that age bias situation. But it's about the position that Gostisbehere is playing. Defense is a harder position to play as a young kid. The fact that he's producing at almost a point per game pace over the last couple of months. He's producing almost an Erik Karlsson type of rate on a team that's probably not going to make the playoffs, whereas Panarin's doing it on, you know, the defending Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks. I'm just so impressed and surprised at how quickly Gostisbehere has developed. And that offense, the team that usually the offense runs through Claude Giroux, but they've got another quarterback now. And to me, he's just had less support. And I don't think we should ignore how impressive he's been.
No, I don't think we should either. I mean, I think he's got 3 overtime goals too. So that's huge. But I agree, he spent the first part of the season in the minors, so if he had spent the whole season in the NHL and he had been putting up these kind of numbers, then I would be inclined to say that he's right there neck and neck. But I'm not sure that Panarin hasn't made believers out of most people. So we'll see. But Gostisbehere is, or Gostisbehere, how do you pronounce it? Is it
Gostisbehere? Just call him Gostisbehere.
It's not Gostisbehere, right? Isn't it Gostisbehere?
Gostisbehere.
Gostisbehere. Okay, well, whatever. Anyways.
No, I was just about to say props to Ryan and Matt for saying it correctly instead of copping out and saying Gostisbehere, and then Ken had to go and ask how to say it.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, whatever the pronunciation is, he's put up a great season, and I think it's a testament to this rookie class that, you know, we're talking about this, that there are so many kids that, you know, people are talking about, and but for my money, I think it's Panarin at this point.
And for the record, as an aside, even the Flyers scouting staff refers to him as Gostisbehere. I know the scout who first discovered Gostisbehere, and he told me the story of going to the rest of the Flyers staff saying, "You guys got to come see Gostisbehere. Reunion College, you got to see Gostisbehere. You got to see Gostisbehere." And they kept going back, and it became sort of this folk hero among the Flyers scouting staff. So if they can call him Gostisbehere, maybe we can get away with it.
All right, looking ahead to the trade deadline, Jimmy Howard has become a rather expensive backup in Detroit. So the question is there a market for Jimmy Howard? Will he get traded before the deadline?
I would think that the only kind of option now is, a team like Calgary, where, I mean, the Flames aren't going to do anything this year. That's obvious. But, if they could get Howard and sort of say, like, okay, well, you know, he's an NHL starter. We've got a lot of uncertainty in that position right now. Maybe they can get something else from Detroit as kind of a sweetener. I could see that scenario, but I would think his stock is pretty low right now overall.
And Jimmy Howard, he reminds me a lot of Jonathan Bernier. For one, the price tag doesn't really match the production, but secondly, Jimmy Howard is one of the smallest goaltenders in the NHL. I've stood eye-to-eye with him, and I'm always surprised at how small he is with his equipment off. And when you're a small goaltender, just like Bernier, when you're struggling, the holes in the net are gaping, as opposed to being a 6'6" guy. And Howard doesn't have the same confidence he did a few years ago. There are just too many holes in that net, and I don't know for sure if Howard's ever going to establish himself as a bona fide number one goaltender in the NHL again.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think anybody would. I can't imagine anybody would be interested in picking this guy up at the trade deadline. Like Ryan said, maybe in the off season, and maybe if, you know, maybe if it's a salary dump by Detroit and they sweeten the pot by throwing something else in. But I mean, with goaltenders, you know, when you can pick up Devan Dubnyk off the scrap heap and get what the Minnesota Wild got out of him after that, you know, I just can't imagine you would give up anything and or take on that kind of term for a guy that, you know, you really don't know whether or not he's lost it or whether he's ever going to get it back.
Hey, Ken, which outdoor game is Cheap Trick playing at?
The one in Minnesota, I think. Yeah. I saw them at the All-Star game when it was in Minnesota. They're awesome, eh? Like, they're right in my wheelhouse, right? So, yeah.
Dream like Police or Surrender?
Surrender. I'd have to go with Surrender. I'm more of an old-school guy. I'd have to go with Surrender. But they've got a lot of great songs.
Southern Girls. That's my jam. Yeah.
Their Live at Budokan album is outstanding.
Do you have it on gatefold vinyl?
Best albums ever.
I saw them open for Pearl Jam in 1998 at Molson Park in Barrie.
Were a lot of people confused?
It was a weird bill.
Yeah.
were your tips frosted then? It was 98? I'm guessing yes.
No frosted tips, but my hair would have been shoulder length.
Shoulder length.
Hey, that's right, buddy.
Late grunge.
You had the flow going a little bit.
Flow and plaid.
Nice. Nice.
All right, I think on that note, we'll end it for this week. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.